So welcome back. And is there anyone who would like to pose any questions? Or now we'll give you another chance to talk about that, your experience of the meditation. We saw your note, Catherine, that you enjoyed it and delighted at that. Care to share anything? And you don't have to, just offering.
Not really. It felt very good. It felt like I was getting some sort of a ability to balance more effectively than I have up till now. I could relax into it rather than feel sort of pulled in a lot of different directions. And that felt very comfortable. And that's why I didn't want to leave. I did have a question, though.
Go ahead.
You mentioned that the major status focus right now is kind of the mature share versus the baby soul impose. Do you have any idea of a time frame when we can expect that status to shift from impose versus share to more share overcoming impose?
Well, if you're talking about, on the American level, it depends literally on what community you're a part of. Because in fact, there are many small communities and smaller groups who are forming alliances, who are sharing and are doing quite a good job at it. They're just smaller represented in number. And because you have a young soul media that is still largely based on the advertising and hyperbole model of the, you know, that sage warriorness that we talked about, demand your attention and, you know, and feel the hype, you know, it's instead of genuine vibrations, it's more like shock therapy. Since that's the way that then the kind of news and information that is mostly represented out there in the world has that kind of edge to it.
And it's not when will there be the shift from the actual focus on that being the majority of energy, like the majority of being that shock treatment?
Probably won't be
more of a shifting to the let's share, let's moderate, let's be a little bit less in your face with our aggressiveness.
To put it bluntly, it won't be within your lifetime.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, not within your lifetime. Yeah, it's it has many decades still to play out before the ripple effects happen. One of the ways that we will say this too is, remember that, you know, the mature soul era is the scholar era, is the assimilative era, and what happens in assimilative periods, things disintegrate. And there is a lot of disintegration in personal relationships, institutional standing, the environment itself, unfortunately for this lovely planet. Is on a roll, you know, a building wave toward further disintegration, not reintegration, not yet, not for quite some time. But like, to use another metaphor that is one that also could fall under that category, is think of an hourglass. The hourglass has been turned. And so individual grains of sand are falling into and starting to accumulate on that side. But the vast majority is still on the top, way down. Does that make sense?
Good analogy.
Good. And that bottleneck then at the center of the hourglass, of course, are the beliefs, limitations, resource deprivations that have been, you know, pushed to this point and that must be, again, disintegrated, disentangled, and little by little, person by person, group by group, et cetera, change over. So,
thank you.
Certainly. Jean, Sauvage.
So I will admit that I didn't seem to grab on to anything in terms of the meditation, in terms of a sense of what my highest yield will be going forward. And I was wondering, and I walking into this evening, I felt called to ask that my highest purpose or action right now that will, I guess, for lack of a better, help the world around me.
Probably the most important thing as we look at your essence at fifth level and where you're at in the, in the midst of your fifth internal monad is to find ways to be as genuine in your emotional expression and as stable doing it in whatever way you take on. The major thing about you is you have what we would call a high likability quotient. And as a high likability quotient, you're a person then that is a natural attractor. And as a natural attractor, that means that you help to kind of naturally put people both at ease as well as often draw them out. Now, as you know, even though we often, chidingly talk about sages and their vociferousness or their verbosity, sages also can be incredibly skilled listeners and excellent questioners. Most of the talk show hosts out there are sages because, they don't need to shine the limelight on themselves, even though they get it by virtue of it being their show, but they can help shine a spotlight on somebody who needs it. And for you, much of that will be in terms of the way that you just simply interact with neighbors and, even the way that your own food, your own development of your understanding of food and the environment and the way that you utilize resources and how you've, over the last few years, really, besides, delving into some really fun recipes, you've actually started tying those things. You've become more Michael Pollan-esque, if you will, if you know Michael Pollan, right? And trying to integrate, what your own individual likes and tastes and preferences, how they resonate with and how they are informed in you and how you, what your worldview is. And why you eat to make, the very food you eat helps to raise your vibration, make you healthy, keep you happy, keep you in, more attuned to and with yourself. And being that then gives you that highest yield output for you to be with other people. For many of you, in fact, we would say that there is some variation that is similar, although not exactly the way that we've put it with Gene, because Gene, even though you don't consider yourself often necessarily as a public figure, when you're a public figure, you're public. I mean, you're often in the, step out in the limelight, you become a limelight drawing figure. So from henceforward, knowing that whatever venue, whatever forum, wherever you go, whether you're in the supermarket or on stage, literally presenting, a talk about one of your books, that is the energy to hold as your highest yield state. Now, for you personally, the highest yield state for you involves remembering that you can't do right and you can't do wrong. You can only be. And the more that you allow yourself to be, and the more you feel love for your own, what you might call foibledness or your own uniqueness, because we realize, obviously words have power. You as a sage can appreciate that, right? Whatever description you use, if you can bring love to that, that's where the acceptance goal change of this year, all the realizations of the first part of the year coming into focus and just saying they are as they are. We've been humorously and lightheartedly, and we'll share this with you because as another sage, we know you can pass this one on with a big smile. We're calling it the Popeye affirmation. Just tell people, I am what I am. And yes, you can say it that way. I yam. As opposed to a sweet potato, which you are right. too. So we hope that's an understandable as well as vibration lifting response to you.
Yes, thank you. That's very helpful. I appreciate it.
Because that is the objective. And we hope you heard that in the visualizations, ladies and gentlemen. It is about how to raise momentary vibration. It doesn't mean any vibration you're in is a wrong one. It's being able to remember what they said. Start learning to adjust the dials. Become ultra precise. Now, for those of you who need a visual reference, you can download what Stephen and we created in the Vitality Tone Scale. That has a lot of the descriptions, and it shows a lot of the bandwidth of the different wavelengths of various vibrations. None of them are better than the other. It can help you identify and locate by virtue of reading the word. It will give you, you know, that vibrational reference and say, oh yeah, that's where I am. And then from there, you can say, what is it do I need from this tone, from this place, or what's being communicated? Then, since this is the planet as well as the plane of choice, is to turn and say, can I choose to be in a different frame of mind? Can I choose to intone a different emotional state? Or if it's from the mind, actually hold a different attitude, any of which might change the vibrational resonance within yourself or between yourself and another person. Because the more vibrations can be adjusted, and sometimes, by the way, dipping into the lower vibrations that we resist, not because they're bad or evil or wrong, but because we're scared of them. Dipping into them and bringing acceptance and love to them can be incredibly healing. That's what happens with a good hospice worker or a good therapist. They allow people to descend into those places where that vibration is so heavy, but it needs so dramatically to be acknowledged, to be heard, to be accepted as part of the whole. And then what happens after that is there's expansion. So thank you for that question and allowing us to extrapolate, Jean.
Thank you. Anyone else?
You're welcome. Anyone else have questions this evening?
Stephen, I just wanted to say that...
Ashrin, yes, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to say that, Jean said, I may not have realized my highest yield in love, but from the moment, it definitely felt like the energies were moved and it was a higher vibration. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. It is our pleasure to help facilitate our students to step into and have an experience of these things as other than just conceptual. So wonderful and lovely to have you here. Welcome as your first time. So, anyone else? I think Ashram was complete. You might mute again.
So has their hand.
Who's got their hand? Oh, Catherine. Sorry about that. Yes. It suddenly you went to the high the outer corner of my screen. And you're so how would you like what can we do for you, Catherine Rose? Hello? Are you there? Catherine, are you there? Doesn't look like you're muted, but we can't hear anything from you. Might be on. Can everyone else hear me? Just nod for those of you who have heads on the screen. Okay, so all right, so it's not that I'm not broadcasting. Okay, well, when Catherine is maybe able to get on board, we'll take her question. In the meantime, is there anyone who would like to ask anything else? Yes, Karen.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I can. Yes.
Okay, great. So it's funny you use that Popeye analogy. I use that in a Zoom class I was in a few weeks ago. And what I realized is that was a balance point, but a transcendental state of what my spiritual teacher called a transegoic state, but it was in line with, you know, the higher yield, the higher vibration. It didn't go over well. People just, I don't know, you know, I don't seem to have that high likability quotient, but I just wanted to say that I think that's an incredible analogy to, you know.
Well, thank you for that comment. And we like you. if nothing else, you're here.
Yeah, I'm here and I'm glad to be here. And I love the way that you teach. And I'm just so grateful that I'm here and that everybody is here. That we're here and we get it, you know. I'm grateful. But anyway, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. And we'd like to comment, because if those folks, if it didn't go over well, they're not in a transeoic state, a transegoic state. They're in an egoic state.
That's the way I felt. Yeah.
One of the things about essence, it has the ultimate, and Tao above it has the ultimate sense of humor. We're fond of saying, you can tell an essence had a sense of humor. It created you, didn't it? You know, I mean, right? And so to simply declare in a cartoon voice, something, by the way, that Moses heard from the burning bush on Mount Sinai. The burning bush, when he was speaking to God, said, I am that I am.
Yeah.
I am what I am. It's just merely a modern, lighthearted translation of that exact same powerful message. So the fact that people could not see or hear the real message behind the form, when everyone sees the form, we can't hear you, Catherine, but I will answer your question now that you've put it in the chat box in just a moment. When people can't see beyond the form, then that's an egoic state. It doesn't mean that the ego is a bad thing. It just means it's a container that's limited. The egos, all egos are influenced by current fashion, by the impressions of their experience. They have preconceived notions that aren't even necessarily, quote, beliefs. Just notions that, you know, were kind of inserted. They're not necessarily attached to them, but they were stable data just installed. So when a person has that kind of reaction, we simply offer a general rule of thumb. And that is, when there's a sudden loss of humor, you're in an egoic state. Something got twanged. And usually it's the kind of thing that we call on the Zing clunk meter, a clunk. In other words, something got understood all right, but not to our liking.
Yeah, there's a teaching, the Buddhist teaching of the conceit of the I am. And I was trying to put that into, you know, modern terminology, but it's basically once you realize that there's something besides you, you know, like I am that I am, but there is something else, then you lose the conceit or the attachment to your own, what they call it, aggregates. And it's just a real powerful moment of, you know, a time when you can really transcend into a higher state intellectually and experientially, you know. So anyway, I talked too much, but
no, thank you for sharing. What you're talking about is the doorway to the non-dual.
Yes, absolutely. Or to the ability to what I call the triangulation, where you allow you know, the witness or the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to characterize it as, to descend into the duality and bless it, you know, that was a huge eye-opener for me too. Because, you know, we all hear about the mystical marriage and, you know, how the duality becomes the unity. But then in order to do that, the spirit has to bless it. So it's just so beautiful to me. And I'm glad Popeye had a voice back in 1933, believe it or not.
That's right.
When he came up with that. So
right.
And anyway, yeah, it's just I love it. Yeah, anyway, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
We would give you a new mantra for that teacher or those classmates. Simply go,
or I'll gladly pay you Tuesday. Yeah, I get it. I'm not doing those classes anymore. I transcended that need. So anyway, yeah, I'm here. I love it. Thank you.
Very good. You're welcome. So, Catherine, let's see. I've been told by Michael that I have a self-karma of doubt this lifetime. Have I healed that? Let's do a scan on you since we're just getting you energetically tonight. We're looking at your monad, late 60s, you know, mid 60s. Okay, so looking at your life arc right now, we would say that if we were to divide doubt into three subterms, one would be skepticism, another, which is also the possibility gives rise to curiosity. The other doubt is cynicism, which gives rise to pessimism and, you know, enmity. And then the third would be self-doubt, essentially, which is a lack of confidence in one's own beingness. We would say you really try and keep on top of pessimism. It is something that has actually served you through a number of lifetimes when you've done cynic, as far as to be, you know, like wary of, you know, strangers bearing gifts, so to speak. But largely that isn't a downfall for you. The part of the self karma that we talked about back then was you having a form of self-doubt or non-certainty about your own beingness. That is, you know, to some extent, you know, a scholar's self-karma, as many of the scholars on the call tonight could attest to, that difficulty feeling a solid, not exactly a solid central core, but let's call it a reliable set of coordinates. That often takes a while for a scholar because of that assimilative nature. So that honing in on self, especially when going between the self-deprecation and arrogance axis, can be particularly troublesome. You have been more willing to be curious. Power mode has helped you facilitate that. So in any case, we would, you know, to give a simple percentage in just arithmetic terms, we would say that you're probably about 85% along. And the one that probably still, you know, hinders you at times in the background is the self-doubt part that then can become a tendency to want to go into that pessimist on the negative side, you know, of cynic, which is to say, well, I don't know about this character. But your skeptic, your curiosity part, the part of you that is really working to keep yourself open, gets in there quickly and says, well, wait a minute, what are we really, you know, what is this person trying to say rather than just dismiss it? So we're going to give you an 85% a solid B plus. And the part of healing, if you will, if you want to call it that, that still would be good for you, if you will, is to notice that you're at times when you're not sure of something, that you are still quite okay saying, I don't know. And in fact, when you can give yourself that level of acceptance, of an I don't know, I'm not sure, it can actually allow you to be a lot more buoyant and not feel weighed down, you know, into having to either definitively find an answer, because in some cases, existential questions can feel heavy, but they don't have one answer. They're a constant ongoing exploration of essence through personality and personality through the mind. And that is absolutely an okay state. So anyway, we hope that's been at least somewhat useful of an answer for you. All right. Okay, yes, good. All right. So who else had hands up? We're looking across the screen here. All right, Carol, welcome. Laughter, yoga, fun.
Okay, I have a comment and also a question.
All right.
In regards to the meditation, it was interesting because I pulled something in my back, not majorly, but enough to be a pain, so to speak. About 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, somewhere in there. But one of the things I noticed recently was that my breathing was a little bit more labored, and I do a lot of deep breathing in regards to laughter yoga and things like that. So finding that I can't breathe quite the same way was not good. And I found that with the meditation, my breathing was a lot easier. So hopefully that will, you know, help. And be interesting to see with my next laughter yoga session what, you know, if it is better during that, because there is a lot of deep breathing going on there. And my question is in regards to what we as women have just gone through over the last week with Roe versus Wade. And if I was 40 years younger, I probably would do a lot more. Then, you know, I can march, but over and above that, there's a lot of things that, as far as being an activist, I'm not sure I could do. But what can we do with the young women that I suspect don't have a clue what that means, that that was turned over?
Oh, it was overturned. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and in fact, a friend of mine's daughter, and the friend has passed away. And her daughter said, you just keep your legs closed. And this is somebody, you know, I know that her mother is up there in slapping her across the face over that kind of a comment.
Yeah, Judy's daughter.
And
yeah.
Judy's daughter, right. Yeah. And, you know, and she's not young. I mean, she's in her 50s, so we're not talking about a young kid. But there are the young people, the young women that, you know, it'll never happen to me. I mean, there's always that denial that's in there and everything. But the ramifications of turning this over and what's next are there. So any suggestions as to...
Is that the question? What's next?
Yeah. Yeah. What's next and how do you reach those women?
It's going to be difficult. A lot of the women who you're talking about are stuck literally in a young soul imprinting that I'm impervious. I control my destiny, which is one of the myths in the American culture that was really promulgated and even warped even further during the so-called New Age movement. But really it's just a twist on old puritanical teachings. You know, oh no, you just do this and you don't enter a state of sin and, you know, nothing's going to happen to you. And of course, you know, the technical term for that is bullshit. It's nonsense. The Tao and the universe operate with so many concurrent gears that even the best of our psychic colleagues could not predict, plus the interaction of free will. Now, because she's her age in a state where she is also another angry person who takes their anger and makes themselves more and more narrow-minded. That is one of the ways that, you know, the that anger closes the sixth chakra, from down in the third. And, the only way, what's interesting is the ramifications for that is that becomes a negative attractant, because that kind of anger not only brings anger, but it brings, you know, or at least raises the possibility of ill will, especially on the very tangents that the person is, quote, angry about or vehement against or self-righteous in espousing. Judy knows, because she was a nurse and saw what that kind of thing brought firsthand. But this woman has grown up in the age of what we've called since the 1980s, the age of entitlement. And what's ironic is, and it's not entitlement of the poor, like Social Security and Medicare, just because they were given those names. It's the entitlement of the privileged. The more the privileged, the more the entitled. And that attitude is being measured across the board and measurable. And entitlement is usually a strategic psychological state that tries to help somebody who really doesn't feel like deep down they, quote, deserve. So what they do is they assert ultra deservedness. And another leg on that strategy is the willingness to take or deny others, take from others or deny them. And of course, that's the mindset that's running the country right now. You know, we say so, and you won't do it. You'll do what we say, regardless of, you know, there isn't a wealthy white Republican woman out there who isn't going to have abortions on demand whenever she wants, if there was ever, a need for her. Not in the least. But appeasing those who are really feeling the threat, the working and blue class, a blue collar Republican who's already over 40 years been denied an education or, you know, been shoveled through an educational system that has been systematically depleted, making them less knowledgeable. No capacity or little capacity for critical thinking, and equated consumerism with citizenship. They don't know the difference. You know, people espouse the idea of rights, and all they think about really is, what do I have access to and what do I can buy? Or now, who can I shoot on demand? And that kind of equivocation has been a steady and slow reintroduction of, an indoctrination of and warp of actual principles. But it has sunk in and effectively at one large band of the population. So what's next, as we see it, is going to be the dismantling of the separation of church and state. Yeah. And that'll be the schools. That'll be, particularly support for private schools. It won't be private anymore, the state subsidies, giving people tax credits to pull out their funding of taxes. And what's, not a Supreme Court action, but essentially what is a Republican hierarchy action is essentially the bankruptcy of the United States and the privatization, essentially, of what government functions are, so that you'll live in a full corporatocracy that is essentially run by a Congress of corporations. That is their ultimate aim. And that is the kind of thing that will also trigger essentially revolutions throughout those who are educated enough to understand the difference. So anyway, that's several layers, the personal one and then some of the larger ones.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Yes, that's right. Exactly. Bread and circuses, Catherine. That's the concept. And you have now the NFL, the NHL, the NBA, the NBA, Major League Baseball. And shall we also mention MMA? But the biggest one, believe it or not, that keeps people pacified is consumption. Just plain old consumption. Costco, Walmart, and food. And usually junk food. It literally warps the brain. So, Joe, you had your hand up.
Yes, I had just a comment on the meditation.
Yes.
And this is what happens for me in most meditations is I close my eyes and focused, and there's a feeling that comes around my head. There's various spots that it means to me something one way or the other. This one was right in the center, which generally means that it is not me that is doing this. Mm-hmm. But I've mentioned before that I focus on closing my eyes and changing the color that I see or holding it still. Mm-hmm. And that kind of stuff. Well, this time it was just holding it still. It was quite easy to do that, which is not unusual, but it's not real easy either. But the colors that came through was the first one was an odd color. I've never seen do this before. And it was a turquoise, similar to the color that Barbara Taylor's
photograph
has on it. Then it gradually, and then was fairly close as well. And then it gradually changed to a red for a little bit, and I could hold it still for a while. And then it goes into this deep blue, which is how I go to sleep a lot of times. So that's just a comment. And the intense pressure right around here was something that was a little bit higher than normal.
Hmm. So you're familiar with the sequence, it sounds like, the volume, which is just a little turned up. Would that be fair?
The multiple colors is fairly new. That's three colors at one sitting is, I've never seen that before. Uh-huh. Two, maybe, but generally it's only blue.
Hmm. Well, congratulations for a 20 frequency scholar, to have your bandwidth expanded like that on one little visualization. Way to go, Joe.
I'm not sure that's what it was. Whatever it was good.
Okay. Okay. Our interpretation. So thank you for the comment. Jillian.
I have to admit that I got frozen in the meditation. And I think you said a word in terms of overleaves that absolutely for me freezes, which is martyrdom.
It's mortification for you.
I really don't like going there, and I really recognize the power of people who are. And I feel like those who are moving us toward fascism are absolutely willing and happy and honored to be martyrs. And it makes me nervous. So that was like the context in which I experienced that. So I had trouble hearing, you know, like going through it and feeling like, where do I fit in? I will not be in martyrdom. How do I not be in martyrdom? What do I do with these? But I do think we are heading toward fascism, and it's a question of how quickly. And we've already got, they already broke down this week, the wall between church and state, and they are having government funding of private schools and religious schools. And as Carol talked about, there's abortion and now they've done the planet, and it feels like there's so much that has to get done. And I don't know how much time we have to do it. And I don't know where I'm most effective doing it. Particularly like staying out of being a martyr. So that's just kind of my experience, and any insight you might have, or Michael, the consortium might have, would be much appreciated.
Sure. Well, we don't need any of you to martyr yourselves in the negative sense of the word. Some of you, though, out of a sense of, you know, hey, whatever my life is, it's worth it for me to do it for Miranda, or in Steve and Karen, Sarah's case, it'd be Wyatt. You know, for Jean, it would be her daughter, et cetera, et cetera. Do it mean, you know, throw whatever your resources are, because you know, for you, that is a higher vibrational investment. But technically that is, you know, an expression of the positive pole of martyrdom. It is, you know, a decision to sacrifice one's ego self, you know, one's beingness, as it were, you know, and throw it on the heap.
I can deal with submission. Martyrdom feels like it doesn't get you anywhere.
Well, it doesn't, but it, because martyrdom is not in the negative pole. Martyrdom is weak and reactive. It is frozen. The old negative pole was mortification. You know, and when, you know, people would say, "I'm mortified." You know, they would be stuck, you know, in this, you know, oh, well, self-flagellation is one of the ways that they could do it. But you know what? After a while, that wears off of the martyr, and they want to beat somebody. The victim always becomes a perpetrator in some way, shape, or form. They get behind big level perpetrators, you know. Yeah. And the Weimar Republic under, you know, before Hitler really got in there, you know, the forces of, thank you, Ashwin, for being here. When, you know, the Weimar Republic was imposed, it put the German population under such hardship that they became, you know, martyrs, and they were looking for, what do martyrs look for? A savior.
Someone to blame also.
Yeah, well, they needed a scapegoat and a savior, and they got both, right? And they were willing to line up behind that savior and raise their arms and, you know, Sieg Heil and, you know, do all the rest of it. And they had a nice homogenous face, you know, of, you know, supposedly the nice white Aryan, right? That made it easy. So in any case, that kind of, I mean, it happens in India, you know, between the castes. It also happens between the Indians and the Muslims. You know, it happens in the United States between different races, different colored skin. There's only one race, you know, and that's Homo sapiens, that, you know, you guys, and you can all breed together. It's just what, you know, what hue is going to come out on the skin tone, right? What, you know, what quantity of melanin or not. But in any case, that kind of differentiation, that's the negative pole of discrimination, you know, and differentiation. But in any case, fascism as it stands right now, we would say is actually also, you know, it's taken a big leap forward because of the Supreme Court. And what it also has is it will require those of you who can teach to teach. And by teach, just say, and this may mean some really, you know, who was it? Carol was talking about the young woman. Just say, did you ever have civics? Do you know what the function of government is? You know, I mean, and actually starting to lay out, even somewhat vociferously, what facts of the structure is. Because as long as you can speak and you still have that ability and write, although what fascism definitely tries to do is invoke eventually a police state to quash that under the name of law, whatever that law is and whoever's enforcing it, right? But it's not there yet. So it doesn't even have to be marching, but it can be what you do already, which is writing, which it can be what you do already, which is phone calls. It can be what you do already, which is postcards. You don't have to, you know, risk your heart going out and marching, unless you'd like to do it, you know, with, you know, in a wheelchair, just so that you're not, you know, straining your body. And that's, you know, that's up to you. The point is, this kind of that version of martyrdom is not what's useful here. It's blowing up and confronting martyrdom that is useful here, and speaking directly to it. Like, what was that, what's his name? Benno, the fellow from Texas, who stood right in front of the governor after the Texas shooting and said, "This is your fault."
Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah, Beto O'Rourke, thank you. You know, that is the kind of standing up against power, as unpopular as is, and as bad, you know, bad as it might get painted, it is exactly what's necessary. And that's what power mode ultimately is. It's not necessarily throwing a punch. It's the sage mode, because it says words have power, and speak them. And whoever you speak them to, just know they will have an effect, but don't go silent. And for you, going silent would be almost unheard of in one way or another, because you just can't. Submission won't let you. You know, you're a mountain lion in a kitty cat's body, and you could still scratch, you know, and when you roar articulately.
What do you have a sense of timeline? Because I think that for fascism,
For a full fascist state to really be implemented, where people realize it's full fascism, will be by the mid 2030s. In the meantime, there are still opportunities, and okay. There are still parallels to be formed, where, you know, there's a lot of people who call themselves Democrats and liberals who are starting to get armed too, and who are literally, you know, looking at this idea of civil war in a very real sense. And even though you have very vociferous and ignorant, you know, gun-toting people out there, many of them are really scared. And if somebody stands up and shoots back, they're not going to be so quick to engage.
I was thinking more that what's the timeline in terms of what's the opportunity for turning it around?
Yeah, the opportunity will have been probably the United States, as you know it, has three more elections, presidential elections, before it will have gone off the edge. And in that time, there is going to be a good deal of civil unrest, possibly on a large scale, violence, real big confrontation before the institutions are actually, you know, bankrupted, or that people turn the tide themselves. There's, you know, it's interesting. All these people who say that they're Trump supporters, a lot of them behind the scenes are just horrified at what they're finding out. You know, they know that, you know, those of them that went for the, you know, Capitol sounded heroic and what have you, but the more that they find out about how this was staged by a wealthy elite, and the more that those people who are in those blue collar ranks who are being crushed by the same financial interests that are crushing everybody across the board, when they realize, oh, we're not special just because we call ourselves Republicans and they're not going to rescue us, then you will find more of those even red gerrymandered voting areas being turned blue, because the alternative for these people is getting really hopeless. I mean, they've already been hopeless and they've backed in, but they've wanted their savior, of which Mr. Trump, you know, fulfilled that outrage, you know, a very stupid individual who shouted, you know, curses and derogatory terms, just like they would, but who had lots of money, just like they want to be. You know, that embodiment for them was great, but you know, it will lose a lot of its luster. The question is, will the ones on top, have by that time, you know, they've done the coup, at least part of the coup, by, you know, packing the Supreme Court. Of course, that happened when Mitch McConnell committed treason and failed to bring President Obama's nominee to, you know, the Senate. President Obama didn't do anything like have him arrested, or the Senate themselves, you know, take him out in some way, but that he had enough. And of course he's got a lot of, you know, the big money in this country and even indeed the world, you know, underfunding ALEC, which, you know, basically, keeps him and his party afloat. So that's our current rate of things. That's how it appears to us from this trajectory forward. And yet we would tell you there is one parallel, which we hope does not happen because it will be the end of the world. And that is if the Western powers go to war against Russia and Mr. Putin, it looks like there's a 20% chance he would launch nuclear weapons, and that would be the end of it for everybody. Even if every major city in the world wasn't, you know, completely obliterated, you know, that much nuclear winter in the atmosphere would take care of the rest of, you know, life on Earth, you know, in about maybe 100 years. So.
Well, the survivors would wish they weren't.
Precisely. Precisely. Exactly. Yeah. So, but there's a lot of creatures that, again, would actually evolve and thrive, and they would just, and humans would be more on an equal footing until they ate them all up and then they start eating each other. So those that didn't die of radiation sickness first. So, yeah. So did that, by you going mute, Jillian, we take it that, unfortunately we answered your question somewhat sufficiently, albeit pessimistically, perhaps. All right. Karen Willett, we see you have a hand up there.
So jumping on from Jillian's asking about timelines. And I know Michael doesn't get predictions, but is there any strong possibility of seeing consequences for the seditionists and Donald Trump from the January?
Not strong, but about... we would say that after these last few rulings, that this next election actually keep the Senate in balance and keep the House in Democratic hands, because it's only going to get it's only going to reveal the evil. And we use that terminology as not a supernatural thing, but as, you know, the maliciousness of greed and a compounded, you know, actual conspiracy of, or more like mindset, you know, of people in power to really, capture as much power as they can. But the power of individuals to act in reaction to that is also growing because the frustration is growing. So the best window is in the next 6 months, in other words, next 5 months.
Because I just really feel that if there aren't consequences, you know, this was just the practice run.
Yes. Oh, no, and, we thoroughly agree.
And then, you know, I was watching, you know, in terms of the Senate, you know, all we need is two more Democrats.
Right.
And
right.
we can put into power, we can codify Roe versus Wade and make sure the Supreme Court doesn't, you know, reverse, bring us back to the 19th century and stack the court.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I'm, you know, if, I was just kind of getting Michael's take if that, you know, if we can, I don't want to just keep the balance in the Senate. If we could just add a couple more people, we can just put a stop to this.
We'd have to say that is a lower probability trunk as we see it right now. It does not mean it can change. It won't change. But at this moment, it's still a lower probability trunk. It looks like it actually could stay even. You know, with Joe Manchin being, you know, not a Democrat, but
the Republicans, you know.
Yeah, no, we understand. You know, what has to really happen is Mitch McConnell, if we may be so blunt, needs to drop dead.
I wish a lot of them would drop dead. I'm sorry, it's probably not karmically nice to say, but I really, you know.
Well, you know,
I wish a lot of them would just go away.
No, we have to tell you, Karen, that is the junction that is here. At the time of Soul Age Evolutions, old souls can't worry about karma and karmic implications if you're going to be in a body. You know, you can be the few old souls that, you know, went to Tibet and are sitting around in monasteries and chanting, you know, Om Namah Shivaya, et cetera. That's fine. You could do that. But You are there, unless they have the overleaves, they're just involved in escapism, not being here. And at this point, a time in history, to realize that passivity, not being a pacifist, mind you, because many pacifists are quite active, but passivity in the face of this and, quote, not taking a side is not the direction that will help turn the planet in a progress direction. Time and soul age will progress, but how far it will progress will be determined by the type of progress. You know, I mean, if say the nuclear war scenario, yeah, you'll go into the mature soul era for about 150 years until, you know, all the beings on this planet die off and then have to go to Earth 2 to replicate the experiment to finish the group karma. But, you know, nobody gets a free ride on the karmic, what's the word we want to say here? You know, on the karmic roller coaster, you know, one has to ride the ride because that's what the physical plane is, riding the ride. Question is, which direction are you going to ride it? Backwards, just holding on, or are you going to get in? And sometimes you push even. So, I mean, again, we use metaphors here, Karen, we realize, but that's where people are. Well, good. As we've said many times, you know, metaphysics is essentially metaphors for understanding purposes. So, did that answer your question?
It did. Thank you.
All right, very good. From Jen Russell to everyone. Yes. Okay. So let's see whose hands are up. Catherine. Let's see. Jan, was that a question? Just yes or? Okay. If I don't see an answer, I'll assume no. Okay.
No. I was actually responding to some things Jillian wrote. And well, I guess this. I just think the president should have the balls to expand the Supreme Court. But that's just my little, I will now go mute.
Well, you know, what you're saying is assertive. And actually, that's exactly what's needed, that assertiveness. And Karen's statement is, I wish he'd dropped dead. That's a courageous act to say, even if it is a karmic no-no, right? You know, I mean, no, the reality is, you know, it take up a collection. You know, maybe you guys can do we're being facetious here, but it's also not really. And we're letting Stephen come through. So we'll just tell you the bias, it's his. But, you know, do a GoFundMe for, you know, a paid assassin, right? You know, do a collection plate, right, for somebody who's willing to do. I mean, really, you know, and what you say, Jan, is about Joe Biden. You know, Joe Biden is a decent soul, but he's an acceptance and he's a schmoozer. And he was a schmoozer. What made him the, quote, perfect candidate was that he was, you know, the nice guy that nobody could really hate. I mean, there are a few real extreme people who, you know, say this let's go Brandon stuff and FJB and all that. Yeah, right. You know, I mean, they're really in the minority. But Joe Biden's push factor or his determination factor is really, it's really difficult, again, because he's in acceptance, you know? And so he's been a good president and done a lot of things to actually help shepherd through this time, but he's meeting with an enemy, not a willing collaborator. And so, you know, two brain cells, eh, Joe? You think they have that many? All right. So in any case,
no, they don't. They
yeah. Don't. So in any case, you know, we realize it's humor here to some extent, but we'll try and shift the seriousness for a moment and just say from the standpoint of the reality of the situation, many of you are, you know, who are in the liberal, democratic, progressive side are very comfortable. And, if many are not necessarily complacent, but fed up, and they think that they actually think that having the option to opt out, which is a market concept, by the way, not one about, you know, participative democracy. There is no opting out, because opting out just actually means you're voting for the opposition by absentia. And too many people don't realize that. Or they're so smug and or so personally well-heeled enough for themselves that they're not thinking about the larger consequences. So entitled. Yes, exactly, Karen. So entitled. And we have to tell you, honestly, if Joe Biden is visited by the angel Gabriel or, you know, somebody that says expand the Supreme Court, then maybe, because he is a staunch Catholic, he is a for real, genuine Catholic. And to that, we actually, as much as he's a schmoozer and has been wishy-washy at times during his career, we have respect for the man. You know, his personal spirituality is genuine, but he, you know, funnels it through moderate Catholicism. He's not an ultra conservative. But in that regard, he also skirts it by saying it's my personal choice. You know, he doesn't, you know, take on those principles to say, you know, hey, wait a minute. So, Catherine, we see your hand up. Karen, yours is still up. So we'll go to Catherine and then back to Karen you're done.
It's interesting that this discussion is kind of a perfect segue to my question.
Oh, well, good.
Kind of three parts.
Okay. Three parts.
There are a number of players that are having definite impact on the American and the global stage, so to speak. I'm wondering about the probabilities of certain personalities through whatever means, more likely natural, because many of the crueler elements of the Supreme Court are aged and getting on in years. Individuals like Mitch McConnell, and individuals like Vladimir Putin, who rumors say is ill. What are the probabilities that anyone or all, or hopefully all of them might leave the physical plane, whether through illness, death, or other natural means. It doesn't have to be someone taking them out, but just by natural means. Because
so when we examine Putin, we get that he has either liver or pancreatic cancer that's being covered up. Okay. And right now he's gone through two transplants. to, you know, and they've managed to keep him going. But that kind of swapping out organs, you know, for the wealthy can be done theoretically, in a perpetual way, at least as far as having access to organs. All they got to do is just grab somebody out of their population and murder them, right? Take what they want. As grisly as that sounds, that's literally what they can do. Yeah. But in terms of Vladimir Putin's own physiology, he's failing. Joe, Putin is literally the richest because he really controls all of Russia's resources. And, Jeff Bezos is a far second. But anyway, so the probability of him dying in the next 3 years is about 40%. In five, 70%. If he were to last that long in office, we actually think that there's enough cronies of his own right now that are getting pissed, more and more pissed, because he's losing the war and really spending an enormous amount on it, and they're freezing, they're getting their assets frozen. Humorous terminology similarity there, isn't it? But we'll plan their own coup with him. So that's the way we see that going. Mitch McConnell has the constitution of a bull. The only thing to do with him is do what they do with bulls. And that's essentially take it to the market and, butcher it. To be really blunt and obviously use really crude slang, but that's literally because his popularity is bought and paid for and now gerrymandered. He look at how Strom Thurmond and Jesse, Jesse, the other Republican from, I think, South Carolina of years ago, how they managed to just lock up Jesse Helm. Thank you. How they just locked in their power base, no matter how old and senile they got. Now, McConnell is a young soul server who's not senile. He is basically cold-blooded, ruthless. And he has all of the Koch brothers' money behind him and the strings attached. Unless something happens to him.
So he won't die, but he can be castrated in the elections.
You better hope for death, because way before he gets castrated in an election is going to happen. If you want to pray for, if we did a visualization on you guys visualizing his lowest healed state, maybe you can come up with something like that, but that's voodoo in all seriousness, and that kind of spell casting comes back.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can wish that evil be crushed. You can put that out there. And more than just prayers, and that's, with information. And vocality, speaking. So
I take the karmic ribbon for that.
Yeah, there you go. That's for a principle. That's not suggesting that you go get yourself an AR-15 yourself and then go down to the range and practice at 300 yards, Karen. We're not suggesting that at all. But you being, one of those people who are still healthy enough, fit enough, loud enough, et cetera, to put yourself in the mix and get behind even, somewhat of more radical elements or be involved in them. That's the kind of thing that, whether you had to punch a cop in a street brawl, maybe great. You get a karmic ribbon out of that. But as an old soul, those kind of things, in the next lifetime, you're riding your bike, your air cycle, and somebody on another air cycle bumps you and you fall off, something like that. So that's done. I mean, old souls are more afraid of karma than it actually influences them, because you're all tired. You guys are all old fogies, and many of you in this group tonight are literally old fogies, right? I mean, you're all over 60 and you're in your 70s and you've been through the 60s, 70s, 80s, and so forth, and you're just going, Jesus Christ, that was like six lies in one. Well, yeah, exactly. It was. And so, oh, and you, Carol, at a very crisp ripe, youthful 83. So we'll give you the crown for queen for the day. But in any case, the point being is, yes, you have a right to your tiredness, and yet through your 40 years of being involved in self-help, personal growth, which, by the way, has suffused the entire physical plane with spiritual seeking, and that's a good thing. That's what's ushered in the mature soul era. You guys have all mostly felt tired by it. You know, when sometimes, let's face it, when you guys are all hysterical privately, you just go, God, I wish this were over. You know, that form of martyrdom, the, oh my God, you know, the Clara Bow form, you know, every one of you have done it once or twice, and it's okay. That's part of, you know, the struggle with a human ego. And it's an understandable sentiment. We're not suggesting you do it, mind you. You know, I mean, that is to say, take yourselves out or even wish for death. Instead, we would suggest to you, go live the best life you can. That's what they say about, you know, that adage about spiting your enemies. That's the best way to do it. Live a good life.
What about the Supreme Court then? The vicious members, the older vicious members of the Supreme Court who are...
Well, you're talking... You're really speaking about one older vicious member, and that's Clarence Thomas. Because
yeah, and Alito.
You know, Alito, I mean, what is he, though? He's only about 64, 60, yeah. 65. You know, Roberts is still in his 50s. You know, and then you've got that, you know, that
young
woman, that, you know, they just put in there. You know, the baby soul, you know, yeah. With the bug eyes. You know, yeah, you know, they're... You know, yes, they'll be there for a while, but fortunately, so will Sotomayor, Kagan, and now the
Ketanji.
Thank you. Yes, Ketanji Brown. Thank you. So, you know, the women are going to outlast the guys on the court, and yes, it does. It will require somebody having, you know, being willing to expand the Supreme Court. And we don't know.
Thomas, you don't see Thomas leaving by any means within the next foreseeable future.
Within the next 2 years, if there's an impeachment attempt, we doubt that it would succeed. What it would succeed is somebody getting to him privately and literally threatening his life and Ginny's, okay. You know, and it being a credible enough threat.
Okay.
You know? So,
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, time for maybe one more question, and then we're going to, and if there's not, we'll call it a night. Let's see.
And FYI, Alito is 72.
Is he? That is he that old? Okay. All right. So, well, then pray.
I put their ages in the chat.
Okay, great. Pray for them aging and wanting retirement. So
COVID didn't work, unfortunately.
I'm sorry, what was that?
COVID didn't work, unfortunately.
COVID didn't work. No, it did not work. It was not a directive, you know, to just take out public figures. So,
but did blackmail get rid of Kennedy? That's the rumor.
Mm-hmm.
Justice Kennedy, you mean? Oh yeah, yes, it did. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, so we could all pray for blackmail.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like Jenny is creating too much of a scandal and therefore, you know, her husband leaves.
Well, see what would be
spend more time with his family.
If Jenny has an aneurysm and dies. Mm-hmm. Listen, most of the Republican hierarchy, like Martha Mitchell, hate Jenny. What's her, Thomas, Ginny Thomas. They hate her. Only she's not really as smart as Martha Mitchell was, or as flamboyant, every bit as angry, but much more, self-entitled. Martha Mitchell was a rebel, and she was not going to, play the game. But essentially, she is that kind of figure in the modern Republican Party. Yeah. And so her having, an illness that took her out would make Clarence leave the court in grieving, because they would say to him, well, you want to be next?
Interesting.
I think it's interesting. We have two either members of the court or married to a member of the court that are former or current cult members. Ginny was the member of the Life Spring cult. Mm-hmm. And then of course Coney Barrett is part of the Handmaidens of Christ or whatever is.
Well, we also have the Catholic members of the court are all part of Opus Dei.
Right. So more Catholic stuff. Yeah, it's crazy. If you look at
Look up Opus Dei and that'll make you.
It's really demoralizing. And Barr
that had role, for sure.
Connection to Opus Dei too.
Yeah, Barr is a member of Opus Dei.
Interesting.
It's bananas. I mean, the religious
power. It's all about power. And then the self-affirming belief that I must be godlike and deserve this power, need that power, and serve God with that power. Therefore, whatever I do is sanctioned by the Almighty.
Right. God loves me best.
Exactly.
Therefore, I can break any rules to do whatever I think is right.
Exactly. Right. Precisely. That's the mindset. It's the mindset.
Yeah. Well, I feel so much more uplifted.
Right. So nobody go to your handguns. Nobody, if you're that downlifted, right? Exactly. So do the meditation, ladies and gentlemen. We realize that tonight's news for most of you with your political orientation.
Karen.
It's my damn it, girl.
Thank you, Karen, for that moment of humor. Does look like his hair, though, doesn't it?
It could be so many people.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Okay. Well, so we want to thank you all for coming this evening. If any of you would like the meditation, we will break it out and post that separately so that you could wish to revisit that. Within a couple few weeks, we will put a truncated transcript, but also the recordings on the website, so you'll be free to come back and listen to them and read some of the high points, or the important points. We don't know if any of them would be considered high. So in any case, again, we thank you for your time and attendance. And as always, we hope that's been of use to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks, Michael.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Night.